Okay, Doug, go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Doug Cohen with the U.S. Partnership Education for Sustainable Development. We have the third annual National Education for Sustainability Week, which has been endorsed and proclaimed by numerous governors, November 6th, and it's recognized and played out in a number of states and K-12. Our K-12 National Committee is the source of the National Education for Sustainability Week. So resources like today's presentation and others that I'm, you know, if you want to propose or recommend, we have a showcase in Oregon at PSU, Pacific, Portland State University, and numerous other campuses have forums for National Education for Sustainability Week. So it's an opportunity to showcase some best and promising resources in climate literacy, and I just wanted to make that you aware of that.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah. This is Lynn Cherry, and Young Voices for the Planet is going to be partnering with National Geographic. They said that they think that we're going to be able to get this curriculum in most of the schools throughout Florida. We're focusing on Florida right now. Curriculum for Whiteboard, and for those of you who don't know what that is, I can explain it at some future point. But I really want to integrate a lot of the CLEAN materials, and I'll be going through it with various members of CLEAN, members of CLN. But if any of you have something specific you think would be appropriate for the whiteboard, please get in touch with me.
Lynn, that's whiteboard?
Whiteboard, it's the opposite of a blackboard. It's an interactive whiteboard.
I know what a whiteboard is. Is your program called whiteboard?
It's a Hyperion whiteboard. They're in 60% of most of classrooms right now.
The G, Carolyn.
No, I know what a whiteboard is. I'm asking what to look at, Lynn, if I want to know what you're doing.
Oh, the curriculum revolves around the films of young people being proactive.
It's Voices one, right. Okay.
Young Voices, right. So, and each of those is tying into science and social action, civic engagement, those kinds of things, and science.
Thank you.
Okay, great, thanks. Any other announcements?
This is Frank. I am in the process of reprinting the climate literacy document, and I hope all know you can get large quantities of the booklet, not the folded brochure, but the booklet, through the outreach at NOAA.gov. So if you have need of, some people know about this, and some people don't, so I just wanted to remind you that we'll have tens of thousands of them being, you know, in the warehouse very soon. So if you need it, please, by all means, use them.
Frank, I could use about 500 of those. Do you ship them at your cost, or do I have to pay for shipping?
No, it's part of our service for you. So the documents are free and the shipping is free. All you have to do is send an email to outreach@noaa.gov and include the request and the quantity and the address you want them shipped to. And it's usually taken care of very quickly.
Okay, so November 5th would be a realistic target, Frank?
Of course. Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
That's great. And that reminds me, Frank, the Society of Environmental Journalists having a big conference down in Florida. That's October 20, around 18th to 23rd. And it's 1,000 environmental journalists from around the world. It's a great opportunity to get information about your programs and everyone's programs, CLN, CLEAN, to the environmental journalist community. So I'll be down there if anyone wants me to help you distribute your brochures, whatever, just I'll give you an address and just send me an email.
Yep.
Lynn, can you send an email out to the listserv that indicates
sure.
what the conference is and what you're looking for so that people will get a better idea of what to send?
Sure, yeah. And anyone go on the Internet and just look up SEJ.org to see what SEJ is all about. They're amazing organizations.
Unfortunately, my director was supposed to speak at that, but travel restrictions due to budget shortfalls have caused him to cancel.
Oh. Okay, well, we need to move on to our featured speaker today. So we have Travis Frank, who is going to give us a presentation on interactive climate simulations to create learning experiences for negotiators and the public. And he is with Climate Interactive. And I will let him take it from there. This is an interactive webinar. He is handling the technology behind this. So, Travis, I'll let you take it from here.
Great. Thank you very much, Tamara. So, hi, my name is Travis Frank. I'm a senior scientist and policy analyst at Climate Interactive. I have known about the Climate Literacy Network for quite some time and have been over to Turk to meet up. I'm also Boston-based. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to attend the conference calls because I have a weekly conflict at the same time. So anyway, I'm happy to be here and really look forward to getting your feedback about the tools and simulators that I'm about to show you. So the slide should have changed, and if you're having trouble, just let me know. I will be giving a short introduction to Climate Interactive, the nonprofit. I'll be doing some demos, and I'm going to be doing one demonstration about a large kind of climate simulator. I'm going to be talking about something called the World Climate Negotiating Exercise. And if we have time, I know it's kind of a lot to cram in an hour. I've got some other smaller simulators that we can show up, but I really hope to open this up for comments and discussion about sort of our approach and how we can help the educator community a little bit more. So who is Climate Interactive? Well, our Climate Interactive's mission is really to step back and improve the mental models of decision makers and in society at large as they tackle climate and energy systems. And so we believe that these are very large, complex systems with a lot of important feedbacks and dynamics. And we think that really one of the best ways for people to kind of grasp the uncertainty and grasp the complexity of these large, complex systems is through interactive learning experiences. And so, and we do these through both computer simulators and then a role-playing exercise at the moment. And so really what Climate Interactive does is we focus on trusted, vetted, free and open tools, and I'll be demoing those at the moment. So we've got quite a few different things at the moment. We're a relatively young not-for-profit, and I have a long list here. I'm going to be covering the ones here in the red circles, so largely the ones that are climate-focused. And so I won't spend too much time on this slide at the moment, but we do have a variety of different technologies and simulators, both in energy and climate, and I'll be showing. And they go from the very simplistic presentation of data to the really more complex and in-depth. We are largely foundation-funded through ClimateWorks Foundation. We do have some private foundations and then a lot of in-kind donations from MIT and some other consulting companies and organizations. So the first demonstration I'd like to have is, what if the United States did blah? What if the United States reduced emissions 80% by 2050? What if it only reduced 60% by 2050? These are sort of the questions that people really have to face, as particularly climate negotiators, those attending the UN meetings in Copenhagen and Cancun, and then the upcoming meeting in Durban. And so to do this, we created what we call the C-Roads Simulator. It's the Climate Rapid Overview and Decision Support Simulator. And it really is to help with these, you know, these questions about, well, if the UN has this goal of reaching 2 degrees C, and the U.S. proposes a certain reduction below a 2005 base year, and the EU has a different reduction below a 1990 base year, and carbon has, instead of a reference year target, it has a carbon intensity target, well, how can we really add up all these proposals in a meaningful at a meaningful time in that it can influence the dialogue and the discussion? So I'm going to stop here and just pause and say, this tool was largely framed not for the education community per se, not for, you know, like K-12 or universities, but it was really framed for use in the UN by the UN delegates. And so you'll see a lot of the things I'm about to present are kind of grounded in that purpose. But we found that our tools have been picked up by university educators, by corporations, by a variety of different people, because we give them away free. And we're just hoping to see how we can better address some of the education the needs in education and the climate literacy more broadly. So, those are the questions. The UN negotiators themselves had problems adding up all the proposals that they were discussing, and here's a quote by then the chair for the Costa Rican delegation, now the chair of the UNFCCC, saying that the environmental consequences of all of these different negotiating positions were not clear, and there's a dangerous void of understanding. And I think that pretty much sums up the need to have a meaningful tool to what we call add up the state of the global deal. So prior to 2008, 2009, there were really no analyses of whether all of these different national proposals would actually achieve a 2-degree target. So we developed the C-ROADS model, and here's just a very high-level box diagram, and that the red outputs are user-controlled inputs, and that you can control things such as other emissions, methane, and other gases. On the left side, you can control fossil emissions by specific countries, and you'll show a variety of different regional aggregations of the countries. And you even have land use change, so afforestation, deforestation. We've had the model scientifically reviewed. It runs on a laptop and essentially instantaneously. It's, again, all open equations, and we have a 150-page manual, which people have used to reproduce the model. So this is a well-known figure from the fourth assessment report of the IPCC, and it shows a range of different climate models through the different SRES or SRES scenarios, emission scenarios. So you'll see, for instance, here's the blue scenario, emissions path into the future, and a range of different outputs depending on which model it is. And the median output here is this blue line, and then you'll get a range of where the different models had. So there's a little bit of a different spread. There's no necessarily a PDF here or probabilities associated with any of these. So how does our model do? Well, if you put these emissions paths in here, so the blue line or the green line or the red line, you get these dots. And so we did go through a scientific review, and we basically reached the median of these larger supercomputer models. These larger supercomputer models in which they take weeks and weeks to run, we accurately reproduce them in, under a second, so that they can be relevant for a constructive dialogue, whether that's negotiators sitting around a room or whether that's students and a teacher. So one quote from our chair of the scientific committee, our review committee, is Dr. Bob Watson, the former chair of the IPCC, and he said that we reproduce the models sufficiently precise for the intended audience. Again, that was sort of these policymakers. And we've also used the model. It's on John Kerry's laptop and has been used in policy circles, the U.S. State Department, Chinese delegations, and around the world. So let's look at a demonstration of it. Here is the main screen of the model when you launch it. Does anyone not see a C-ROADS CP screen with a lot of blue buttons? Just making sure that. Okay, great. So I'm going to quickly kind of go over. There's a lot here, but again, we're kind of time limited. So across the top is documentation. You can actually go in and look at, examine the equations, and again, it's all very open and transparent. What I'm going to do here is select a regional aggregation. You can either choose a single global region model, which has one atmosphere and one polluter, and this is really useful actually for illustrating some important carbon dynamics, lags in the ocean uptake, and a variety of other things. But I'm going to choose 6 regions, just really quick, and click Create New Run. And the model will activate. It does take a quick second to set up. And again, to very quickly give you an orientation to the screen, you should now see 2 graphs and again a series of blue buttons. The graphs on the left side is actually a set of different graphs. And what they show are different user-controllable inputs into the model. So here I've got CO2e emissions by country. You can view them stacked if you'd like. You can view different methane emissions, all of these different types of things. So if I keep emissions by country, then you can look down to see what are my 6 regions. And you see the United States, China, India, the EU, other developed, so other, say, OECD countries, and then other developing countries. And what I'm going to do real quick now is actually deselect some of those so you can more quickly just see the, say, three countries. All the emissions are still happening, but I'm just, the graph now only shows three lines as opposed to six. So, and it shows the China on top, the US, and the EU, so some of the larger emitters. The graphs on the right are outputs of our scientific reviewed model. So here it is temperature, and we always like to make it relative to something. So here it's relative to the 2-degree target. You can actually change the target if you believe 1.5 is appropriate for your dialogue or discussion. And so what's the model going to do? And other outputs we have are, you know, atmospheric concentrations. So this is atmospheric concentrations relative to, in this case, a 350 goal. We've got temperature change, sea level rise, temperature change, ocean pH, and a variety of other information in the model. So really quick, I'm going to set up a target, and what I'm going to do is set a reference year target here. So I have the U.S. selected in the input method. I'm going to choose a 2050 target for the United States. And when I select this, you'll see the red line drop relatively quickly. So I've selected it, and you'll see the red line drop now here on the left graph. So what is this saying? It's saying I'm going to have a 0% reduction below 2005, which is here in the lower left corner, the reference year. You can change that, and every country can have its separate one, and by 2050. So, Juliet, I know you're on the phone call, and if I'm going to just put you on the spot here and have you give the U.S. a target.
Oh, okay. Why don't we do 40%?
40%. Okay. So, real quick, if people, before I hit return, if people have an idea of how much this would actually reduce emissions, if the U.S. unilaterally created, you know, a 40% reduction by 2050, so would it make a half degree difference or a tenth of a degree difference or anything like that? So. So I'm going to hit enter now, and you'll see the red line drop on the left graph. So now it's doing a 40% reduction starting in 2012, slowly going down to 40% here in 2050 and remains constant. And then here you see a separate line about that's dropping from the business as usual or reference case scenario. So how much temperature change did we avert? Well, the new temperature change in 2100 is 4.7, and the reference temperature change is down here at the bottom of 5.0 degrees C. And so you can see that we've, by the U.S. taking this the single unilateral action, it's preventing about 3 tenths of a degree of Celsius change. So that's sort of the speed and rapidity of the model. And you can really dig into a lot of different issues. Here we can switch to China, and we can say China can have its intensity target. So say they're going to reduce emissions per unit of GDP, 25% below 2005 levels, and you'll see China drop down a little, possibly. They tend to have a really strong GDP growth, so when you start having different things in the denominator, you can start seeing that it really takes, GDP growth can really start impacting the overall dynamics quite a lot. So you can, and that's one of those things where people might not have realized that, but you can start quickly getting a sense of how much it's going to take if you're going to have rapid GDP growth by 2050. So that's the really quick overview of the complete model. And there's a lot of complexity in this model. Again, here you can control a lot of other gases, methane, and other emissions. Here you can control aerosols. Here you can start looking at all the uncertainty, so we allow people to change the climate sensitivity of the model if you'd like. You can change the rate of ocean mixing and a lot of the other uncertain parameters. We even show graphs of uncertainty. I know there were some emails this week on presenting and communicating uncertainty. Graphs are not the best way, but we try to at least make sure that we tell the climate negotiators and anyone using the tool that uncertainty is, you know, this model is only a projection, and there's uncertain outcomes in the future. So I'm going to pause here and just see if there's any questions.
Is this available to the public?
I'm sorry?
Is this available to the public?
Yes, it's available to the public. You can email us and we can get you on the download list. We're actually in the process of making it so there will be a form on our website that you can just click and download. Unfortunately, it's not automated at the moment. But yeah, no, it's freely available, and currently it runs on Windows, and I'm about to show you a website.
Is it only
then
on Windows?
So yes and no. We have different versions that can run on a Mac and different software. The version that looks like this only runs on a Mac.
Do you have one of the variables population in your model?
We do have population, but unfortunately, well, in this simulator, in this simulator, we don't have it affecting emissions, so there's no link between but what it does is it can affect things like the calculated emissions per capita. So you can change the we use the UN's projected population growth numbers, and you can change those, but it doesn't actually affect the emissions of a country. It only affects the calculated emissions, so per unit of person. We are working. Our energy model is actually working much more on building the emissions from drivers of energy intensity and population and that type of thing. So we're working on that through a different simulator. In the UNFCCC conversation, having population as a control variable was not on the table. So.
I have a quick question. This is Sarah Harris. I was wondering, with what sort of speed do the people you're working with ramp up and be able to use this on their own?
It varies. So, some of the people who use it for education can dedicate time to kind of figure it out. We are working on a couple different things in which people don't need to know as much for say, this World Climate Negotiating Exercise, which I'm about to show. And then the analysts with the various, say, UN delegations or companies, it depends what question they're trying to answer. If they're just trying to answer, sort of the what ifs, adding it all up, what if the U.S. did this, what if China did that, that can be relatively quick. It's the question of, do they really care about black carbon emissions and some of the other finer controls? There's a lot in this model, and I want to pause here to say, this model is the one I'm showing you, the version I'm showing you right now, is the most complex version of the software we have. And the reason I'm showing it to you is because everything from this point forward in the presentation actually is based on the underlying climate model that runs this complex version, but everything's going to be a much more simplified presentation of output. So we do have some versions that will be easier for people to pick up. Okay, so I think I'll keep moving to the next one. So that was the C-Roads common platform, which are more complex Windows version. But one thing we like to do is we presented this model and distributed it prior to the Copenhagen Climate Conference, and one thing we felt is that there needed to be some public outreach about what we were seeing. We were seeing that we were nowhere near the goal, so we came up with something called the Climate Scoreboard. And so this is one of our more simplified tools. In some ways, it's not a tool; it's just more of a presentation. That called climatescoreboard.org, and I'll quickly go to it. Here, what it is if I refresh the web page, you can actually see it's an animated Flash widget which draws the current state of the climate deal, and it basically says that if we do nothing, we'll have 5 degrees Celsius. If we do something, we'll have what people are proposing, we'll have 4.3 degrees. We do present uncertainty here with the blue bar. And then the goals are either 2 degrees to 1.5. And so this is what you call what we call the climate scoreboard. It's, again, at climatescoreboard.org. And there's even a video embedded here, which actually does a really pretty nice presentation of describing what it is and all the issues. And I'll just kind of fast forward here. But it just kind of describes the variety of different things of which you're welcome to view at various other times. So this is one of the ways that we found that, again, what we're trying to do is, this isn't, say, interactive, but it really is trying a way to disseminate some of the complexity down to a simple, more simplified view. So I just wanted to point people to that also. you can actually use our tools to do all the analysis, or we've tried to summarize some of our key findings in these various infographics, or however you want to think of them.
This is Caroline. Do you have any correlations with temperature increases and correlation to sea level rise?
Yeah, absolutely. So in all of our versions of the model, we have an ocean model, in which here you can see that, and I can actually make our graphs much bigger, so hopefully you can see this easier. Here we have, here is the two different sea level rise scenarios given the reference scenario here in red and the U.S. unilateral action. Actually, I think China's doing something now, excuse me, but the policy case that we had before. So in both cases, we have a lot of sea level rise.
Do you go beyond 2100? Because the sea level rise projections well beyond 2100 really respond very differently than the other variables.
So we are tested out through 2100, and we tend to present results, again, because they're relevant to most of the conversations. Regarding sea level rise, I totally understand, and I hear you. I did my PhD on coastal adaptation and sea level rise projections and hurricanes.
Right.
And the dynamics there. So if you're familiar, we use Romsdorf's latest edition of his statistical modeling. So that's actually our projection of sea level rise, and there he fits, to certain levels, and he does not really project out or feel it does particularly well in the long, long term.
Right.
Thank you.
But
you understand the fundamental difference. I mean, it's the key thing that while the projections might not be very skillful, but there are some really sizable differences between sea level and temperature and other things, as you indicated. And I don't know how you would characterize that.
Absolutely. So we have chosen not to worry so much about the long term. We had one person who wanted us to. And then maybe I'll just switch over to it. We have something called the Climate Momentum Simulator, which is, again, on our website. And if someone is, I forgot who wasn't able to see the screen, if they go to our simulations and look for the Climate Momentum Simulator, then they can find it real quick. But it's a flash.
I got it.
Okay. And so what we have is here is we have emissions here on the bottom, atmospheric concentrations in orange, temperature here in the third one up, and sea level rise. And then the only lever we give people, and this is sort of yet again interactive, is trying to link the different causal relationships and the lags between the indicators, is that you can actually choose to have different levels of proposals, flatten emissions, and see that even with flat emissions, concentrations still rise. That's actually a non-intuitive thing we're finding. A lot of people believe that if you flatten emissions, temperature should flatten also. They don't understand quite the stock dynamics of carbon dioxide and the inflow and outflow to the atmosphere, what we call the bathtub proposal, bathtub phenomenon. And so you can here just crank down emissions even further, and you can see what it would take to reach goals. And again, you can see that sea level rise is rising. So we had one client want to modify this and have long-term equilibrium sea level rise, like a number here in the upper right-hand corner, that it would be in, say, the year 2500, the year 3000. And so far, we haven't found a lot of great research that would allow us to do that very quickly. The best we found is 1 degree is 20 meters, and that was in a James Hansen paper, at least a white paper that he's written. So we definitely are aware of it. But we haven't found a lot of great projections, because the paleo data seems to be pretty confusing and hard to isolate out the signal.
And the whole climate literacy network, let me just throw this out there. I'm in Miami, and I'm working with, a nice cohort of climate scientists. And here's the numbers they're throwing out. And whether or not, I'm sorry, we're still in metric, but not in metric, sorry. Whether or not we're 2 or 5 feet ocean rise by the end of the century, we're going to be at 1 foot a decade at the rate of increase thereafter. So that 2100, the tipping point is crossed, and the rate of sea level rise is what's extremely worrisome. And I'm I'm really looking at the explanation of that and the data that suggests that that's happening, and I'm going to urge you to look into that. These visual models are really hooking, very, very effective for visual learners who aren't overly scientific, but this is really awesome.
Great. Well, I'd love to talk with you. So one of the things I'd like to do here is, again, this, I'm kind of showing you what we have available for people, but I think the important thing here is to, if there's uses, then, you know, or new audiences. Everything we've done to date has been made for a very specific question or audience. So again, we developed the first tool I showed you for the UN negotiators, and it's important to kind of realize that we feel that it's, you know, there isn't one model or interface that will communicate to everyone. So we did the scoreboard to reach a different audience. People, over 800,000 people put it on their Facebook pages and that type of thing. So, and then the simulator, again, it can be used for very simple presentations, this climate momentum simulator, excuse me. So yeah, if you have an audience or a stakeholder group in the Miami area, for instance, that is really trying to bring together some people and build understanding, that's something that we can do some work with. So, but I did want to come back to something that I know is dear to Juliet's heart, which is actually something called the World Climate Exercise. And what this is it's different than the computer simulators or the web simulators that I've talked about. What it is actually a role-playing experience for a classroom. And what we do is we divide a classroom or a room in general full of people to six different groups. And they can be, you know, the OECD countries and the fast-developing countries and the rest of the world, or a little finer-grained, but that would be the three version. And then we ask people to come up, go through three rounds of negotiations, stating what they would hope that their region's doing. So we give them country briefings. They play their part. They are, you know, the industrialized countries and that feel that they can't make quick changes and it would ruin their economy. They are the Chinas of the world, and they realize that they need further economic growth. So all of these different dynamics really come into the room. People experience it. People realize how hard it is. And we actually have all of this material online on our website. I'll quickly just go, and it's under the World Climate page. We have videos and facilitator resources, so you can actually go and learn how to do it, watch a videotaped session of it, download all the PowerPoint slides, all the briefings, all of the support materials. It's all up here. And what it does is it really drives home this experience about how to really drive it. And we've done this real-life experience with oil executives, European business leaders. We've done it for NGOs. We've done it for D.C. stakeholders. We did a large group in D.C. with a lot of NGOs and people from the administration. We've done it in Copenhagen. We did it several times. We've done it through elementary school, I believe. I know we've done middle school and high school, and I know Juliet's done it at UMass Lowell quite a bit. All around, it's been done in several different continents, and it's been quite effective in bringing this climate negotiations and the climate issues to heart. And one of the things that I wanted to really drive home is how we use the simulators to support this type of material. So we've got this experience, but the dialogue and the conversations that people have would possibly be just kind of out there and not really grounded in the science. So what we've done is we actually created what we call C-Learn. And C-Learn is the same complex, scientifically reviewed climate model that we called C-Roads, but it's a different user interface on top of that same climate engine to really kind of act and support this learning experience. So we have a web version of this. We also have a downloadable version. And here's the web version. And this web version is also designed to support the World Climate Exercise. So by default, the only version that's on the web is the three-region version. So again, the OECD countries, you can just click to see who it is. Here it's China, India, South Africa, Mexico, Brazil, and it continues. So you can see the different versions, and then you can say, well, what if these countries have I think we had a 40% change for the OECD countries below 2005, starting in 2012, and then you click the Run Simulation button, and the blue line here is the developed, and you click Run, and it goes to the server, and it runs, and you can see the results relatively quickly. This is, again, not as instant because it has to go over the internet, but it works pretty well.
Have you actually run one of these, Travis?
Have I run one of what? Sorry?
One of these world climate negotiation.
Yeah, I did one 2 weeks ago.
And how long, I mean, I'm sure it'll vary as you wish, but what's a reasonable length of time to, and I guess you need access to computers and internet to use.
Well, you don't necessarily need access to the internet. You can do it locally. In fact, I'll show you one. So we are trying to build a standalone version of this so people don't have to have internet, but right now it is a little slightly easier to have internet. But the point is we've done it in 2 hours. I don't like it. I think 3 hours is a much better experience, and you know, half a day would be even better. And we've done it, like the ones we did in D.C. was actually a multi-day or a day-and-a-half experience. So 2 hours is too short. You get people to rush through it, and there's no time for a debrief. And one of the things that we've really found is that as we do this type of interactive experience, you need time to talk with people, because we make some of the impacts pretty salient throughout the experience, in that, for instance, we have the small island states sitting on the ground. We have the OECD countries, the developed countries, at a table with flowers and nice food. We have developing countries like China and India sitting on chairs but with no table. And then we have the rest of the world sitting on the ground. And so when it comes to, people do the first round of negotiations, and of course no one gets even close to saving the world or getting to 2 degrees, we grab a blue tarp and show them what the height, and a meter stick or yardstick, and show them, drag the blue tarp out at the height of the projected sea level rise that they just all agreed to. And that, of course, covers everyone sitting on the ground. And so we have these types of more salient experiences that need an appropriate debriefing at the end. Otherwise, people walk away just completely destroyed and kind of desolate. So we find that more time for the debrief is always effective to basically switch to people so they can start discussing solutions.
Right.
So.
Travis.
Yeah.
This is Juliet chiming in here. We're working on this right now. We're developing a project website, and part of it we'd like to give you as well is video and an explanation of the world climate experience, but then also like some modifications. Like, we've been working with Sarah Schley from Seed Systems a little bit about some of her methods of debriefing that are really helpful. And I think one of the things that as a scientist was really hard for me to do at first, but I'm getting more used to it, and I'm finding that it's really helpful and useful, is to spend some time allowing people to really experience the emotional response that they have and to kind of work through that a little bit, because it is a really, I think the fact that it's active interaction with, active learning through interaction with a simulation, but it's also a social learning experience, and people, like you say, it's really hard hitting, and it really gets, it can be a very powerful experience, and it's important to, so we'll be in touch with you about how to most effectively get that stuff out, but we'd like to, add some of the, so Sarah's been really helpful in kind of in helping us develop better ways to debrief the experience.
That's great. Thank you. So I realize we've got just a couple more minutes on the call, and so I'm going to show through one or two other quick things. I've shown the momentum sim. One of the last things I want to show is just a really quick iPhone simulator, which we have this application in which this is an iPhone app that we'll hopefully be releasing in about another month. But basically what you do is you start your finger here at the black dot, and you just trace emissions throughout the rest of, in this case, 50 years. And when you stop, you'll see in the upper left-hand corner it says 0.86, and when I let go of my finger, we instantly calculate what the 2100 temperature is given the emissions path that you just drew. So this is, again, in a very interactive simulator. You can just keep drawing as much as you want. We feel that there's some lessons here that are kind of useful for people. One is flat emissions don't equal flat temperature and doesn't get you there. Some people still believe that. you kind of get a sense of how much fall over time to reach 2 degrees, or I guess case 3.6.
When people use this, I mean, you know, the people that are skeptical out there, is there some way that you can establish that this is based on real science, that it's not just you just creating something because you wanted to get a message across?
So, you know, that's a great point. Maybe we should add some stuff to the webpage supporting this. We do have some information here about the I think we probably have it. I don't actually know. Let's see. Just about the science. Maybe we should include a little bit more about what this is based on, other than it's based on, you know, our general work on that larger climate model.
I guess a question, and I think I've asked you this before in one of your other webinars, is that there are people out there who doubt even the most sophisticated of models. So what will make them think that this is right?
Yeah. No, and I think that's a big challenge in how to communicate to people who come in believing that everything's already pre-cooked. And I'm not sure that this type of computer simulator is the answer. The only thing I can say that we try to do, and that we try to address that is that so this iPhone simulator, application really does not address some of those things, because we try to simplify things, you know, almost as much as possible. But when you go back to the more complex model, we really, like, for instance, we have these sensitivities. So for some people who know enough about, like, well, I don't believe that, you know, enough about the science or enough about emissions or enough about uncertainty, our vision for a lot of these simulators is to allow people to explore their view of the world. So if they think climate sensitivity is much lower, then they can change it and you can get a different outcome. Or you allow people to test their view of the world, as long as and you can see that in real time. And that helps. If you can let people explore their view of the world, how they think the world works, that often, and you're not trying to shut them out from and just say, well, we can't test your worldview because it's wrong, or something, that you allow people to that you're listening to them, essentially, then that does bring people to the conversation, and it still can keep the conversation grounded in these sort of more rigorous simulators. But I think for something like an iPhone app, it would be very hard.
What you might do in the iPhone app is just say that it's based on this model and then provide the link to the whatever documentation you have with the validity of this model without actually having to say it in the iPhone app. You don't have the space there to do that.
So, you know, I had a couple more slides, but we've covered a lot already. So I think I might just kind of end there. Here's one of our museum exhibits. We helped do some stuff here with an interactive tabletop. And actually, if you're in D.C., the Koshlin Museum, which is part of, you know, the NSF, we have some climate code behind their new exhibit that just opened up in September. That's pretty cool.
The NRC?
The Koshlin's NRC.
Yeah, excuse me. I apologize. NRC.
No.
But yeah, they have a really nice touchscreen interactive simulator, and that they, I think, just opened up in September. So.
And is really that a replicable model?
They're going to license their exhibit out. You'll have to talk with them. Our climate code and what, you know, for the projections of some of the stuff that we gave them, you know, is embedded in their simulator. So it, we did some of the back end stuff, not any of the pretty museum exhibit stuff.
Caroline, was that you?
Yes.
Patrice LeGros is the director of the Koshlin, and she's because it's associated with the National Research Council, their licensing is not like, you know, AM&H or another organization. It's very reasonable, and you know, sometimes it's more focused on intellectual property than it is about revenue. So, but that's something, you know, Patrice would be able to help you with. They're very easy and good to work with.
And Patrice is doing is I know has already licensed this exhibit to I believe a science museum in North Carolina and also a science museum I believe in St. Louis. So it's,
but
it's already
your work is all free, right? Climate addresses.
Our work is free. Yeah.
See, I'm thinking of the public garden world, and you know the NOAA APG
yes.
MOU that we signed, and being on the board and being in a public garden now with my offices, I really want to create a platform that's scalable, replicable, and transformative, and I like the interaction of this. I'm just thinking, I don't necessarily have to run with any of it right now.
Well, we would. I mean, if we would love to talk more. I mean, that type of thing is, we feel that we want to reach, you know, a broad audience. So you kind of saw our mission of
helping
improve people's mental models, as we like to call it, the way the world works. And we just feel that this sort of deeper engagement can be very powerful.
Well, we feel that public gardens are a good place for non-confrontational climate change interpretation and exposure. So between science cafes and, you know, Frank and his team had worked on an iPhone app. I think this type of simulation where people can actually interact with some parameters, knowing what the scientific community is saying, could be very powerful. So I'll just think it through a little bit more and be in touch with you.
Great.
I'm delighted to hear what you've said about the importance of debriefing and your taking the degree to which you're taking that really seriously, because I see that as critical.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think we do have people on our team that, you know, that's built more ingrained, and then there are some of us who may have stumbled upon that through experience. But we found it. And one of the things that Juliet's kind of been, she's got a sneak peek of and I have not covered extensively in this webinar, but we do have an energy model that is really helps people explore, like, their view of the energy transition. And that really starts getting people to explore, like, how renewables play a role, how nuclear does, how some miracle technology might, how energy efficiency really would affect long-term dynamics. And we, of course, have that all grounded into like a capital stock turnover model, which is, I mean, so for instance, you don't just get new cars overnight. It takes time to change over the vehicle fleet.
Yeah.
But that conversation is a much different conversation than this climate exercise, and it's fun to talk to people about solutions.
How long will it take before that's ready to go?
The energy one?
Yes.
You know, it's actually going through. We're trying to set up sort of a peer review. We would like to have everything kind of independently reviewed. I don't know, and I apologize. I would say at least 6 months, and I'm not sure. We're doing this for some people, again, who don't have public distribution is not their first priority. So unfortunately, we're just trying to meet their list of to-do items and not necessarily thinking about how to package this up for free and on the web yet.
Thank you.
You know, what you were describing the Koshland, it sounds like an interactive whiteboard. Is that right?
They actually have four touchscreen, large touchscreen surfaces. And then a 10-foot wide by 4-foot tall monitor in front of all four of those. So it's a very, very big exhibit that's a touch surface display. It's not really a whiteboard.
Because I've been working with National Geographic to actually create content for their whiteboard. This sounds so perfect, and I don't know if you'd be interested in maybe partnering with them, but they can get this input. You know, just so many tools, if that's one of your interests.
I would love to talk more. And we have worked with some with National Geographic already. So, for instance, in the slide right now is, which is one of our professors that we work closely here at MIT, is Professor John Sturman at the business school. And he talks a lot about what we call the bathtub. And so this is actually an illustration that National Geographic did of working with him and our team to kind of really illustrate this bathtub phenomenon of emissions are the inflows, the spouts, and the natural systems are the outflows. And as long as the spout is filling up, putting water into the bathtub more than the outflows, the oceans and plants are taking it out of the bathtub, then we're going to have increased level of concentration. So that's, we've tried some of these more simplified communications also. So, and we actually have a, since, anyway, we have it, we have, that's a simulator that we also have on the web. So there's definitely, if you want to poke around Climate Interactive, there are some simulators that I didn't even get to. This is a really nice simulator in that it's pedagogically a little more sound in that it walks people through lessons. Like there's three different lessons and it has set up material where it's describing about what you're about to do and then it kind of built, has you interact and then it replays what you just did and that kind of thing.
Okay. Have you done this with municipalities, with city councils or county commissioners?
We have wanted to, and we have talked with a couple different people about doing it at the city scale, and both simulators at the city scale and also doing world climates and sort of those negotiating exercises. We found it tends to be resonates differently when you start talking about national emissions at an urban level. You know, the,
right.
So we'd love to talk more about how to do that effectively. In fact, Juliet's been brainstorming with us about how to do that also. And we're still – Juliet, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, we're planning – so we've I've done it with several community groups. Actually, I actually ran it with the Massachusetts Climate Action Network chairs, and then we're planning on running it in Somerville. But – yeah, we haven't done it yet, and I think it's really important to follow it up with some kind of activity about thinking about, you know, sort of a positive build-up of transition, not just a sort of how are you going to reduce and it's hopeless. And because, I mean, basically what this thing drives home really effectively is the tragedy of the commons, and
right.
I think it's important to get over that in some way, to not really leave people with just that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Juliet, how do we contact you?
Oh, I'd be happy to. I'm on the CLN. I don't know, Tamara, do you know what's the easiest way to get? I can
if you just
put my information.
Tell me your email address. What's your email address?
It's JULIETTE_RooneyVarga, RooneyVarga at UML.edu. Sorry, yeah.
Varga at UML.edu. Did I get it right?
Yep. Yep, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Can
I share that? Travis, the other thing that I'd like to suggest is some of your simpler interactives would be very appropriate to be reviewed in the Clean Collection and be available through that venue, and I think that would be a really nice piece to have. So we should have a conversation of which ones are most appropriate at this point and get them in that into that pipeline.
That would be great, and I believe mm-hmm. Scott might have Scott should be involved in that conversation also. I think he might have looked at some of our stuff already.
Okay, great.
We if I remember right, we did at the last retreat in the camp.
Oh, you did? I didn't realize. So in case people aren't aware, we passed 250 more resources in the last review camp, which was at the beginning of August, and they're in the process of being cataloged now.
Right.
You know, another great venue would be AAAS. They did a town hall where they at the AAAS meeting in San Francisco where they had 1,000 people in the audience all using clippers with Rob Sokolow's, you know, the wedges. And it seems like this would be a great exercise, you know, to get 1,000 the scientists, but then also invite the community for like a town hall meeting like this.
And we've done some things like that. So, like, sorry, I think I might have cut someone off. Please.
Well, I was just going to ask if there was other questions. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying we've done a couple. We had a couple presentations in front of people using the simulator. Sorry, in like lectures in front of large audiences using the simulator, and we can do it pretty interactively, and sometimes inspirationally. There's actually one of a TEDx talk that's on our website, in which one of my colleagues has done something like that. But unfortunately, it's much harder to be optimistic. That TED Talk was before Copenhagen, and now it's a little different climate to be optimistic about people taking action. But but yeah, it'd be great. I unfortunately won't be at AGS because I'll probably be in Durban at the climate conference, but yeah.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? This has been really a wonderful presentation. Thanks a lot, Travis, and I think that a lot of people are going to be in contact with you about making use of the resources you have.
Great, and I really look forward to talking with people more. And I think this will also be available. Maybe if this recorded correctly, we'll try to post this slides or at least the presentation on the web too. But feel free to contact me and go to our website and poke around and play with the simulators. I'd be happy to talk with you more, however it works best.
Well, how do we contact you?
My email is TFRANCK, so Travis Frank with a CK, at climateinteractive.org.
Thank you.
It's on the screen right now, too, so have you.
Can I, before we break, this is Juliet again, can I just, the comment that was made before about doing this at AAAS, a bunch of us will be at AGU. I wonder if, you know, I would certainly be willing to volunteer to run a World Climate with a bunch of scientists at AGU in December. Does that seem like something that would be... It's a serious time commitment for people to make, because like Travis said, you really need 4 hours to do it right. Does that sound like something that people, that would be feasable or interesting to do?
Well, you know, Juliet, I mean, what we had actually a conversation about potentially having climate change education projects in the story. The issue is that they're all, there's five climate literacy sessions, and they're all on the first 3 days, and people are concerned about people already being overbooked. And so I don't know that it's feasible, you know, if it was an hour, but I don't know that 4 hours is feasible. But I do think we should think about seriously how we might exactly do that in a meeting in the future. We could potentially do it in a number of different venues. I just think we needed a little bit more lead time than we have for AGU right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I am really interested in pursuing that idea. I think that would be a really interesting exercise.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess another thing is we'll be running it. I think it would be interesting, and I think it would be great for scientists to experience the human side of this a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that you get out of this experience. And I guess the other thing I'd just mention is if people are interested in, if people are in the New England area or near Lowell, we'll be running a version of World Climate in my class this semester. And I'd be happy to, you know, offer an open invitation for anybody to come by and observe and
Well, Juliet, this is Tara. Let me know when that's happening because I would love to see that.
Okay, great. Yep, it's in November. I'll let you know the date.
I might have to. You can't just see it. You have to participate.
You know, one thing you may want to do is there's a interagency PI meeting. I mean, listserv. I'm wondering if we haven't had any briefings on that, but wondering if something like this, because there are a lot of the informal education institutions who do this kind of work, like Aquarium of the Pacific is coming to mind, Monterey Bay Aquarium, the California Academy of Sciences, where they have, you know, programming with adults a little bit more than they used to, that might find this valuable to have this resource. And they may know about it and they may not know about it. I'm wondering if there's a way to brief those practitioners. Would you be open to that?
Yeah, there actually is the ASTEC meeting, the Association of Science and Technology Centers. Their annual conference is coming up in 2 weeks. My friend at National Geographic and I are actually doing a presentation of the whiteboard and what you can do with it. And it seems like this would be a great opportunity to show, you know, a couple different things, maybe one of this being one of them. You know, that's just sort of a demonstration of how you can do these interactive, you know, kind of interactive things in, with the whiteboard. So I'll get in touch. I'll also write that in my email to you.
Okay.
And,
okay,
and
the
if,
challenge
and
that,
if, and
the
if that
challenge
was a question
that people have pointed to that I think is most critical is the minimum of 3 or 4 hours to address this. And I would love to engage everybody in a discussion of how you get that type of time commitment to really get people to hang with this outside of a scheduled class commitment kind of thing.
Absolutely.
I think that's a big issue.
Well, that's why I brought the informal in, because the flexibility is a little bit greater
right,
there.
But it's the getting the people to commit the time and some ideas about how you do that.
Yep.
Conferences like the NAAEE, we're doing a whole day workshop there. This would be totally suitable for that.
But I mean, Lynn, one of the key things is how do you transfer it from the practitioners to their key audiences? Because the practitioners are one group, but the people who are actually engaging the public or segments of the public, at that key amount of time. I totally appreciate your point, but finding programmatic ways to engage people for that long is no small task.
Yeah, but it's an important topic. We've got to think about that together.
Well, I completely and thoroughly agree.
Lynn, do you have what chunk of time would you want? Like,
I've done it
in 2 hours, and that it's rushed, but it's not horrible. But, I mean, do we need to boil it down to an hour, hour and a half?
Let me talk to him. I have no idea how long he was. I have no idea what the time was going to be. So I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. We're actually 15 minutes beyond our scheduled end. So,
cool stuff. Thank you, Travis.
You're talking, but I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that it was okay if people left, and they probably have. But
I'm willing to chat more if people have time and or energy. So, but I don't know if there was a comment about the aquariums and that type of thing, and I don't know if that was to me about whether or not I'd be willing to give a webinar to whoever would be relevant.
It was to you, Chuck.
Yeah, so that would be fine. We do tons of webinars, and we do lots of distance presentations and whatnot. So, for instance, we've done hour and a half presentations where we guide people through just simulators like this, where we run through targets and we run through scenarios. And of course, it's always better to be in person, but we can even do things remotely. And I showed this version, but there are some things, I guess, that I say is you can actually start looking at some of the bathtub dynamics, for instance, using the simulator.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the single region model and run the model, you can start really looking at just how the climate system works and what it's going to take to get the emissions to equal the emissions to come down to the level of uptake. So we even have a graph here that kind of helps people look at that. So not only do we have the World Climate Exercise, but I guess coming back to just strictly the simulators, we actually have, you can actually use these tools to build different curriculum and that type of thing. So here I'm turning on just a simple 2050 target, and you can see that, what type of level of emissions the globe would have to do to kind of start reaching for the two to sync up. So. And stabilize the planet. But yeah, so those types of things are all available, and we can do lots of webinars and remote learning.
Thank you very much. I'm sensitive to the time, but you've done really impressive work here, and I think we'd be well advised to benefit from it, partnership.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. And Ms. Will, the recording will be posted.
Excellent. I hope the video worked out. This will be a test of my computer system on this side. So, okay. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.